preparedness and ocean policy. And we are going to start, if I can find my agenda, with adoption of our committee rules. You should have a copy of the rules in front of you in your packet. And if you haven't had a chance to review them, if you could review them, and then I would entertain a motion for adoption.
Are you prepared for a motion? Madam Chair, I move we adopt the rules.
Is there any discussion?
Yes. Madam Chair, thank you very much. Would you look at number 13?
Yes.
We no longer have been allowed, us in the minority party, we are not allowed to not only, you know, to sponsor individual bills, but we no longer may sponsor a minority report as of yesterday.
That was what was adopted in the House yesterday.
Yes.
Yes.
So we need to strike it from the committee rules.
Madam Chair.
We're in the middle of,
This was the rule that was adopted in the House yesterday, which means it needs to stay in our committee rules.
Mm-hmm. Are you offering a motion for that?
Yes, I move that we delete number 13 that allows us in the minority to file a minority report since we can't.
Is there any discussion? Second?
Madam Chair, I'll need to oppose that amendment because our rules need to be consistent with the decision made in the body yesterday.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'd just like to echo what Representative Cowan said. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, that was what we did yesterday.
Yes.
So I don't understand why you decided to do that.
What we did yesterday is consistent with item number 13. Which is why it needs to stay in the committee rules.
How is it? It says number 13 that you can file a minority report.
No, and in yesterday's decision-making process, this is exactly what was adopted, that it can be done with these particulars, with the petition signed by at least 31 members of the House. This is totally consistent with the rule that was adopted yesterday in the body.
Okay, Madam Chair. I guess I just read differently.
Well, this was...
Okay.
Pass that over. Yeah. This is exactly what was adopted yesterday.
Well, that's it.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I would like to rescind my motion.
Okay.
Because if this is, but I took it differently.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I took that it allowed us to do that. To file a minority report when we're not really allowed to.
We are allowed to do it, but you have to have 31 members of the House signed by at least 31 members of the House to committee staff no less than no later than 11 a.m. of the session day after the committee action reporting the measure out.
Well, Madam Chair, see where it says all proposed amendments submitted as a minority report shall have been presented to the committee, voted upon, and received the affirmative vote of at least two committee members.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we couldn't do that.
Isn't this exactly what this was adopted yesterday?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is exactly the language. If there's an amendment to something a committee is processing and at least two members of the committee support it, but they are not in the majority decision of the committee, those two members have the right to submit a petition for a minority report. The ruling simply states that there has to be 31 signatures on that petition, and that is precisely the rule that was adopted yesterday. It was incorrectly interpreted as it not being possible to do a minority report. It is, but it is admittedly difficult to get 31 signatures mm-hmm. for a report in that short time frame.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. In this case, that I don't know how to read, and apparently, and do not comprehend this fully. I would just like to then go on record that I think it is very inappropriate to take away the freedom of speech. And not only have we made it more difficult for those in the minority to speak, we also took away their privilege to sponsor a bill. So I'd just like to go on record that I'm very sad about this, and I'm sorry it has happened. I never, ever would have thought that I would serve in a legislature that made it more difficult for a minority group to speak.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Shoffler.
I did not speak on this yesterday. I think that the length of the debate is evidence of the need to tighten up the rules so we can get out of here on time and still get something done. I, too, share some frustration with this, as my good friend Representative Nelson does. But just for the record, the minority report represents a minority of the committee. We have not denied anyone's ability to free speech. What you need to do, according to these rules, is go and get 30 of, well, if there's two of us, 29 of our colleagues to sign on to have that report, minority report, from the committee heard on the floor. I do not agree that we are denying anyone's freedom of speech. We are just operating under a different procedural rule. I do share some of my friends that spoke yesterday and my friend today on the frustration with this, and maybe I don't like it as much as I would have had it had I been totally in control of the rules. But that being said, we had the debate yesterday. We're ready to move on. We have some business before us today, and I'm ready to vote on these rules, Madam Chair. But I do want to thank my friend, Representative Nelson, for bringing it up.
Thank you. And I would, too, Representative Nelson. Thank you for bringing that up. And are you clear on it now?
Yes,
that
I am.
We're okay with that.
Well, we're not okay.
Well,
so, as you know, I cannot endorse it. Thank you.
I agree. Okay. All right. Want to call the roll, please?
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Callan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson.
Nay.
Chair Boone.
Aye. All right. Yes. Before you leave, I know, Jean, we were just going to introduce people if you want to really quickly, just so I don't have to do it in absentia. I'd like to introduce ourselves to the audience, and I will start with Representative Callan because she is antsy to get to her other committee.
I'm Representative Jean Callan. I represent the Central Oregon Coast, House District 10, and with apologies, I have a great deal of interest in everything that this committee does. Emergency preparedness and ocean policy are both loves of mine. There's just another bill that I have put my heart and soul into being worked on the Senate side right now, and so I'm switching between two committees. Thank you very much for your understanding.
Toot sweet. All right, thank you. Okay. Representative Nelson, would you like to introduce yourself? Vice Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Boone. I'm State Representative Donna Nelson from District 24, which encompasses Yamhill County, the home of the Spruce Goose, and a portion of Polk County, West Salem. And it's been my honor to serve in this with this body for 8 years. And I have greatly appreciated the leadership and my relationship with all you guys and girls. It's been an incredible 8 years. I never dreamed when my mother left me that little bit of money and I didn't know what to do with myself after working in 178 countries with Evergreen, that this opportunity came along, and I never dreamed it could be nearly as exciting as Evergreen was in all those countries, but it has been. And the challenges have been almost as great, but what's more important to me is I'm here to look after the well-being of our people, and regardless of party or issue, that's my purpose. And I appreciate very much being on the Emergency Committee. preparedness, because I have been on the other side in the famine in Ethiopia, with the World Health in 13 nations in Western Africa, in Vietnam, in South America, and on huge disasters across the world. And I know how important this is, and I appreciate our leadership in and out of the military. Y'all are absolutely the best in the world, and I just want to continue to support you, whether I'm here or not, in every way I possibly can.
And we appreciate you and all your experience that you bring to it, because I don't know if we can be as exciting as 178 countries, but we can try. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Schaffler, House District 48, Happy Valley, Outer Southeast Portland. And I think I've only been to about 10 countries, but certainly not doing the important work you were to represent. And Representative, I just want to tell you, it is an honor and a joy to work with you. I think this committee, I really like the makeup of this committee. We have a bunch of folks that ain't afraid to speak their mind and don't toe the line for anybody but our hearts, and that I really appreciate.
Thank you.
This subject matter, Madam Chair, I think is becoming increasingly, the awareness of the subject matter of this committee is really growing among our community, and I'm honored to be on it, and I think we have a lot of work to do going out there and selling what this committee, the subject matter this committee deals with. And I think we're going to get some good things done this February. I know we have a lot more work to do next year, and I hope I'm on it, because when the things we deal with here aren't needed, nobody even knows that it exists. And there's a bunch of good faces out here in this crowd that are out there doing work that we pray to God we never need them. But when the proverbial manure hits the fan, we're going to need them there, and we're going to need their whole infrastructure dialed in, which even taking into consideration the valiant effort these men and women have done, I don't believe, and I think they will agree, that we're not where we need to be. But I think the things we're going to do are steps in that direction, so I look forward to following up on that with you all.
And but I'm glad to hear that.
It's always a joy working with you, Representative, and
I hope you
don't go too far, and I hope you're here advocating for the good first responders and the defenders of this nation well into the future.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Me too. So two, I've got two solid members of my committee here, and I think we have Representative Callen would continue also. Not that we're done yet. We're just starting. And I will introduce Representative Krieger in absentia. He is from the South Coast, Gold Beach area, and he serves with me and Representative Callen on the Coastal Caucus of the 9 members of the coastal that represent the coastal areas, actually 8, and 1 from little bit inside because salmon swim up the Klamath River, so we have Senator Whitsitt in our Coastal Caucus, too. And Representative Krieger has been how long has he been here? 4, 5 times?
8.
Yeah, 8
years.
8 years. 4 terms, working on fisheries issues, a lot of ocean policy. Emergency preparedness is only 4 years old, I think, now. So, and yeah, retired state police. And so we have a lot of resource in Representative Krieger's background in natural resource area, too. So he's a tree farmer. He's a retired state police fish and game officer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know how those guys are. They all know each other, too. So, and then I am Representative Boone. I am from the upper left coast area of our state and representing Clatsop, Tillamook, some of Columbia, and a piece of western Washington County. And ocean policy has been my dream for life. I started out at the University of Washington in oceanography, but the fact that I can't go out in the ocean without getting sick curtailed that, and I went into art and psychology, so, you know. But it's still an very much an interest, and when I was named to emergency preparedness, we asked for this committee. It was a joint committee with the Senate back a couple of 4 years ago now, I think, and we had a nice joint committee, and then that got put back together to one, and instead of doing 2 separate ocean policy and emergency prep, we were given the option to have them together, and we accepted that. And that's the other piece of my private life that I do. I've been a first responder on a volunteer fire department since 1990-something, and about 16 years now. And So I do that, and that was my extent of emergency work up until service on this committee, which we've expanded pronouncedly. And just before this committee met today in Brad Witt's, Representative Witt's committee, Workforce Development, they are hearing three different emergency-based bills, and so a lot of you were in that one, too. We have a lot of interest in this area in our state. Believe it or not, there is a growing contingency of people now who do believe that we've got past the what if. It's when, and that's accepted. So with the help of Ken Murphy's agency now put into the military department and Paul Evans from the governor's office, we have General Caldwell's like the Bolshoi Shishka, the whole thing. That's big
you
cheese
said
in
that.
Russian.
Yeah.
That's big cheese in Russian for those of you. I speak a little shipboard Russian, but they have been just tirelessly dedicated to this effort, and Katie King from Public Health, and I don't mean to leave anybody out. Well, Harrison, yeah, the legal beagle. We'll call on him later. But we have had our committees full of people who work so tirelessly in this effort, Oregon Emergency Management Association, and keeps our feet to the fire in this, and we appreciate it. And I look forward to continuing this committee. And I know this is a short session. We're only going to have a couple of bills in each of our areas. But we're working toward 2009, and I intend to keep our issue in the forefront as much as possible. And I think the rest of it. And we have a new committee administrator, Sue Marshall. I didn't mean to always save the best for last. And so we're primed and ready to go. So. Jim Keller. Now he's got a new role too. But he was with us last session. So everybody in here kind of knows what's going on. So we're preaching to the choir on need on all this. So with that, yes.
Can we introduce our able staff over there on the side too?
Martha and Susan. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Of course, we couldn't operate without these guys.
We'd be helpless without them.
I'm yes. Sure. So with that, I think we'll move into hearing our public hearing and a possible work session on House Bill 3608, which lovingly called the PANEMA bill. And this authorizes implementing procedures for International Emergency Assistance Compact entered into by states of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, and the provinces of British Columbia and the Yukon government. And I'm going to call up Paul Evans and Ken Murphy. You want to just come together and do all the heavy lifting for this one. And welcome back again.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Paul Evans. I'm a policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski, and as you've already mentioned, Ken Murphy, Director of Oregon Emergency Management, is here with me. My comments are going to be very, very brief. I'm actually going to let Ken do the heavy lifting today.
Okay.
But
he's good at that.
I wanted to follow up with a couple of things that were asked about a month ago. First, the bill in front of you is a priority for the governor. It's something that needs to be done. As we know, the history of this particular Pacific Northwest emergency management arrangement, the governor actually did sign it before, but there was an opinion having to do with whether or not the legislature needed to codify that to make sure that it was actually legitimate. So we really are asking for your help to make sure that it's on the books the right way. Time is of the essence. There are a number of events that we want to make sure that this is in place for, having to do with the Eugene Games and also the upcoming Olympics. The other piece that I wanted to mention before I forgot, Representative Krieger asked again about a month ago who all had already signed it. And we are, according to Ken, we are beating Idaho and beating Yukon. So we're not last. We are kind of at the rear of the column there, and we need to get it taken care of. And
Idaho and UConn.
Yeah. The other piece I wanted to make sure is in the hearing that we had before there was discussion, legislative council, Harrison Conley brought up some points about having the entire arrangement in the statute. Friendly amendments, you have before you the signed, sealed, delivered deal that everybody is on board with. So I wanted to make sure and get that in the record as well. Are there any questions? Okay.
Yes, for the record, I just want to bring up a couple of issues from my experience in working with others in other countries. But we brought it up to Harrison. Two issues, and I understand that any work agreement with those of another country will be translated from an English version of the agreement, number one, English language. And the second one is, and Harrison can tell what needs to be done, is that we are paid in U.S. dollars. Having been in numerous countries where we've had tremendous problems being paid or getting equipment back, I think those two issues are important. And otherwise, thank you for this.
Harrison? Go ahead. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you guys can duke it out there.
Harrison Conley, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. We did have an opportunity to talk about some of those things informally, and I've marked a couple of things in the document. With your permission, Chair Boone, I'd just go through a couple of these things that are responsive to questions we just discussed. One, if you look at page 8 of the document, we were asked about other signatories. This is an international compact, which means for a state to enter, we need congressional approval of the document, either before or after the states enter it, actually. So the fact that Congress has, in fact, approved this compact means that other states could join at any time by becoming signatories. What you will see there on page 8 is this is the implementing procedures, and 2B recognizes that signatories may include other states, provinces, and territories that hereafter become signatories. So each of those states, provinces, or territories would have to go through their own executive or legislative process to become a signatory. Moving ahead to Chair Boone, Representative Nelson, you asked earlier about priority for resources. On page 11 under Article 4, Limitation, this recognizes that a signatory requested to render mutual aid or conduct exercises and training for mutual aid will respond as soon as possible, except that it is understood that the signatory rendering aid may withhold or recall resources to the extent necessary to provide reasonable protection for itself. So we are not obligated to leave ourselves at risk to participate in assisting another state.
And Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
And I just want to ask, I'm sure, feel sure of this, and therefore we could not, there wouldn't be any liability if we didn't respond. Let's say they had an earthquake in the Yukon, needed us, but, you know, we were going to war and we couldn't respond. So, I mean, they can't, but in this agreement we will have no liability if we can't respond.
I think our obligation, Chair Boone, Representative Nelson, is to use our best efforts to participate. Yes, so there is no liability, yes.
There is, in page 13 on the top, liability. You can read it through there. It kind of goes through there.
Well, and I think that this liability provision has to do with,
action after action, or
for taking action.
Right. Okay. I didn't. I'm worried about the pre.
Right. That the state that requests assistance is primarily responsible for what happens during the response.
Okay.
You asked about the reimbursement. I'm going to sort of skip it. I'm going to use page 13, which has supplementary agreements there under Article 7, but I'm going to skip ahead to Article 9 on page 14. What it suggests there is that a signatory rendering aid to another signatory pursuant to this agreement shall, if requested, be reimbursed by the signatory receiving the aid for loss or damage to or expense incurred in the operation of equipment and the provision of service in answering a request for aid and for the costs incurred in connection with the request. It does not speak.
That would hate me.
Somebody's BlackBerry on.
In any case, this does not respond specifically to your question about currency and what currency we would be reimbursed, in what currency we would be reimbursed. However, Article 7, Supplementary Agreements, recognizes that this is a broad base of elements common to all the signatories, but recognizes that other supplementary agreements would likely take place to flesh out the details. So that is one way in which that requirement might be implemented. It is possible that we could also implement a separate section of law that says for anything that happens under the compact, we insist that the executive require compensation in U.S. currency. So those are two ways that that might occur.
Of course, if their currency is worth more, we.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's Canadian. Representative Shoffler?
That was kind of what I was going to say.
Yeah, we'll accept it.
Man, Chair, I'd imagine this agreement, just like any other business deal, you would be reimbursed at the exchange rate. If you were paying Canadian dollars, it would reflect the exchange rate for American dollars. I'm going to assume that.
Right.
Now, there's one more thing. I was just speaking to the fire marshal's office here just a moment ago. And there's folks, responders, that are requesting a FEMA to reimburse them, and it's only going to be 75% of their cost. We're getting a better deal out of this agreement with the Canadians and our surrounding states than we're getting from our own federal government. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a good point.
Now, I think that covered the specific question and a couple of others, didn't it?
Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Boone, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ken Murphy, the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and in the interest of time and don't want to belabor this, this is really simply the continued efforts of emergency management across the nation, and especially here in the Pacific Northwest, to do anything and everything we possibly can to have tools, people, and resources at our disposal. This is very similar to what the state of Oregon signed on to in 2001, the National Emergency Management Assistance Compact. We have been a member of this group since 1996. This legislation, as Mr. Hebbins noted, has come forward. It's become more operational. We've tried to put in the details of how we share resources across international borders with the two Canadian provinces and the four states. So this is just a continued step to try and mitigate and leave any upfront issues or questions so that in times of need that we can move much quicker to respond to regional disasters or that type of thing. And so I think this is in our best interest, and these are the kind of steps to do ahead of time instead of after it happens.
And I'd like to just jump on that, too, and state last night at a reception of which Mike, Representative Shoffler, is Vice President of PINWER, Pacific Northwest Economic Region.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very interested in this, too, and have been working hard to get this agreement actually expanded to include other provinces, and they're working on that at this point. And they were very... They would like to have been here today, but we've decided we'll have our ABLE staff here let them know how things go when it goes. And the other thing I wanted to say was when the governor's people came to me early on, I don't even remember when it was it right after session? Yeah. And asked for this, it seemed like this was something really positive and helpful that we could do in this committee easily, and this is what this committee's all about. So I was very happy to be able to, give our committee's bill, and we went through a little of this, we're giving up our only bill. But we were allowed to have a second bill, so that made everybody happy. And we're happy to do this if we can. So any questions for any of the panel?
Madam Chair, I'm just curious why Utah isn't working part of this.
Utah?
Uh-huh.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, I can't answer Utah specifically, but this has generally been focused on bordering states, and Utah should be working on it, let me say that, if they aren't, but we just focused in our particular federal emergency management region, Region 10, which is Alaska, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, and then the two provinces that we most often work with. And in fact, whether it's fire, floods, earthquakes, really doesn't matter. You know, the four states and two provinces have done a lot of work together. The emergency management community, the Pacific Northwest economic region have had many of these groups already working, and so again, this is just a step in the right direction before something happens. And I think on another role I have at the national level, we're looking at this across the entire Canadian border with the states, and we're also advocating along the southern borders for this mutual aid.
And last night we were advised that Alberta wants to join, and they're in that process now too. And then Mr. Evans said Saskatchewan is looking to.
Chair Boone, the members of the committee, and I talked to the Pacific Northwest Economic Region people. There's no reason why any of them can't join. We just need to embrace them and bring them into the plan. Saskatchewan and Alberta and Montana have expressed interest. So there's nothing other than getting some signatures on some pieces of paper, you know, and mm-hmm. probably in the Canadian federal government. And we do have to have this codified in Congress also, which we've done for this part of the border states, but it should not be a problem
and
to get the rest.
Thank you. One of the Pinwar people last night said they're working with all of the eastern provinces too, and there's a lot of small towns, small counties, rural, a lot of space, but you know, the populated areas are smaller, like we have here in our rural areas, and they're very interested in getting it. So they're working it from that angle too. So, all right, I think we need to gather our troops, and I'll introduce or entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move we send House Bill 36.
Oh, wait. I need to close the public hearing on House Bill 3601. You know, the other thing is I think we have to then gavel in and accept the amendments first.
Very
so.
Good.
So I'll go ahead and then I'll open a work session on.
Been doing this for a while.
House Bill 3608-1 amendment.
Madam Chair,
thanks for ever learned the process.
No.
Thank you very much.
Please, I move we adopt dash one amendments to House Bill 3608.
Okay, and we're gonna do a little tap dance while we gather the rest of our committee for the vote. Okay. Yeah. Is he not going to come in? Do we?
Can we? Well, he's in judiciary. Would you like him?
Yeah.
To
let's get him because I'd like him to have the opportunity to vote. I'm not sure where he is.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, boy. You're good.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
You've not gaveled in a work session yet.
Yes, I just did.
Oh, did you?
We're just ready to rock and roll here as soon as we get them.
I was going to talk about something else, so I mean.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll just take a minute. Welcome back, Representative Cowan. How are things going over there?
Pretty well.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. We just gaveled in the work session to accept the amendment. Dash one amendments to 3608, which is the PNEMA agreement.
Yes.
And as soon as we gather our last errant member, we will take the vote.
Was it a race? I win.
You beat him. Yes. I'm not sure where he is. Where is judiciary?
Judiciary. Hearing of C.
C. Oh, he's not too far away.
Right there.
Not too far away.
I was further away.
Across the way. But sometimes crossing 20 feet of that hallway can take
that
a long time.
That can be a real challenge, and it's getting to be
you
more so.
You have to put
so
on your Groucho Marx disguise, and which I
you just put your head down and walk real fast, and people figure they maybe better not bother you at that moment.
That's easy for me to do these days.
There he is.
Representative Krieger, welcome.
It was a
back.
Race. I win.
We have just gaveled in work session, and a motion has been made to move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3608, and I'm looking for any comments, if anybody has any, before we take the vote. Okay, you want to call the roll, Martha, please?
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Shopper?
Aye.
Vice Chair Callum?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
And Chair Boone?
Aye.
And we have...
Madam Chair.
Madam
Chair, I move House Bill 3608 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Okay, we're ready for the vote. Yeah, since we have so many. Yes, we're ready for the vote. Yes, sorry. I need to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Shopper?
Aye.
Vice Chair Callan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Boone?
Aye.
All right, we have achieved liftoff. This is great.
Carry you?
And yes, any volunteers to carry this bill on the floor?
Who would have heard the bill?
Representative Nelson, would you like to carry the bill on the floor?
Oh, I would love to carry the bill.
All right, we have a carrier. Who wants to do it?
Oh, you bet.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes, you may. And Representative Nelson, you had something you wanted to talk about before we close here.
Yes, I do. Two things. Okay. At this time, we're trying to procure this book. It came from a C-SPAN book review this week on the 28th. And it was about preparation for emergencies, and it was by a former military individual, and we're looking it up as we speak, my chief of staff is. But it was incredible. But one of the things I learned from this program was that in this nation, there is a group of major businesses that all have 90-pound, they call them biz packs.
Okay.
And those are prepared. Maybe Mr. Murphy knows about them, but I sure as heck didn't. And what these are, in this 90-pound bag, is all of the prevention you would need in the case of an anthrax happening. And I just thought, this is so incredible. You know, we just keep trying to excuse Oregon, saying, well, we're not New York or L.A. or Chicago. But if everybody recall, we're the one that had the terrorists, you know, five of them originally. So I just thought that was very important, that we should investigate this group. It's called BizPAC. And secondly, my concern is that we have not, as long as I've been here since 2001, even, and I can understand having the worst sessions ever for my first 6 years, I guess, with absolutely no money. We have never established a fund. We have no reserve. And Mike, Representative Schaffner, was just talking about how the firemen here are getting reimbursed from FEMA only 75% of their cost. I mean, this is ludicrous to me. So it isn't that last session, or in 2007, we had money. And I just think it's a disgrace that we have not done something to provide for responding. I mean, I don't know how this has even escaped us. To me, you know, we say safety is our top priority. And I'm just curious if anybody has put together a budget of what they feel we need to have an emergency preparedness reserve fund so we can respond to disasters. That's, you know, in the heart of the disaster, there are a lot of volunteer organizations who come to your, you know, support, Red Cross and all of those. Mm-hmm. But it's not the time to go out and get big dang donations from Intel or Microsoft. So I'm just wondering if we could ask maybe the head of the Oregon Emergency Management Association, Mr. Murphy or General Caldwell, to speak to this and tell me if I'm off base. If not, I'm just going to keep pushing this.
Well, I think you have, come on up, General Caldwell and Mr. Murphy. You have a couple of champions here, and thank you. That's why I love you.
Okay.
They are slumping at the bit to talk
about this. Before these gentlemen talk, we have the wireless network. That's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars. We have staffing issues. Homeland Security has helped us with equipment, but we have staffing issues at first responders. That's tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. We have a National Guard and Reserve that resources and equipment and staff have been depleted. To fill them back up are going to be tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, just in Oregon alone. So now I'd say we're up into $2 billion probably. And this is just a wish list coming out of my head, and I'm not an expert on it. So I'll shut up now, but I share my friend, Representative Nelson's concerns.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So with that, would you like to respond?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department, and Representative Nelson's comments are very timely. This morning was put in this room. Prior to this meeting at 8 a.m., we had a hearing on House Bill 3607, which does, in fact, establish a relief fund of sorts. The relief fund's specific intent is to look at areas particularly where the local governments and other entities end up with presidential declared disaster. FEMA comes in with 75%, but you got to match it with 25% typically. And sometimes they can't do that because they don't have the 25%. And so that's what this bill is particularly designed to do, is to look at that particular area and try to retrieve as many of those resources that are offered during these disasters. There was a great deal of testimony on it this morning. We certainly support that effort. There's a feeling at this point is we need to get something done this special session, and to be, you know, finite and laser-like in our approach to deal with not the whole magnitude of issues that Representative Schaffler brought up, which I think are need to be considered, need to be discussed as a policy statement by the legislature in this state as to how we ultimately deal with those knowns that we know are going to be approaching us, and having that quote-unquote rainy day fund, if you will, that deals specifically with emergencies and those sort of things. I think that's a great body of discussion that this group should have, and I think this committee is the perfect place to deal with that, is to continue that on through the interim, and then perhaps in 09 we can come into the session with a full legislative session with some better fleshed out issues that deal with the whole gamut of emergency funding as opposed to just this specific area. This is vitally important right now as we're dealing with FEMA recovery that we're working on, or the disaster recovery in the Northwest counties. Meanwhile, we've got another potential issue waiting in the wings at snowpack, warm weather, 250% of the normal snowpack in the mountains. And so as Commissioner Hyde from Columbia County so aptly put this morning, he said, "I hope that we're only dealing with the disaster of 2007 and not the disaster of 2008 that could very well happen." Sure. And I think that's really where we're all sitting here on pins and needles. I know that Director Murphy sends out emails and telephone calls almost on the hour here in the last few days saying this is where the freezing level is, this is how much snow is there, this is how much rain that we're projecting, and this is what everybody's saying that has the crystal ball on weather. So we're very, very aware of that, and yes, indeed, you're absolutely correct. There is a lack. There's been a lack of resourcing. There's been a lack of thought in this whole area over the years. And I think now that we see this bill moving forward, we see this committee in formation, it's a perfect timing, and I think we just need to keep taking a step at a time to keep improving where we're at.
2009.
Madam Chair, I think we were all a little bit shocked. Of course, I don't live in Portland, but when the tornado came through, I mean, I'm thinking, wait a minute. You know, I moved from Texas to get away from them. They're following me. And I don't even have a basement or a cellar. I the thought behind that made me think, don't take anything for granted. If our responsibility is to look after 3.5 million people in this state, I mean, we have to be prepared for all disasters and know what we would do, and even if they're not something that happens every year. So that, anyway, I thought that really opened, I think, everybody's eyes, and I worried about how those people get their homes replaced,
right,
and their equipment.
One of the, if I may just add on to that, and I think that's a great segue for, government can only do so much for everybody. We all recognize that, and then there's always the constant debate between whether or not government should or shouldn't do things for the individuals. One of the things that government can do and do very well, and will ultimately save money, taxpayers' money, is educating the public on what they, as you mentioned earlier about your BizPAC. I know Director Murphy's been trying diligently over the last few years as we sat away from them. They weren't part of our department, and we were trying to lend encouraging help where we could. But one of those things is public education on what the individuals can do to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that they need to know, i.e. if you're in a, you're close to a flood zone, Vernonia is a good example, and folks that didn't buy flood insurance because guess what? The flood map said you don't need it.
That's right.
And I think that as we as the technology improves and some of the things we've heard about that's happened through the Corps of Engineers and some of the technological improvements where we can get better definition of where people are really in harm's way, they've had, what, 2 500-year floods in an 11-year period. So you know, I think that the traditional wisdom and the traditional thought processes are kind of out the door with respect to what we're seeing now in our weather patterns and our natural disasters. And there's a lot of things we don't know. So I think we've got to be more diligent in getting education out to the public. In that regard, he just hired his public affairs specialist. I think she started on Friday. We've got one person basically that's. We have in the state of Oregon that can go out and educate the 3.5 million people here. So, you know, there is a resourcing issue that's been consistent throughout the number of years that I've certainly been involved with emergency management, both formerly as a county commissioner and since I've been with the state for the last 20 plus years. So I think those are things that we need to discuss, and how do we help people help themselves better? So, as you indicated, if you don't have a basement, what do you do? You know, and obviously tornadoes aren't something that we would probably spend a lot of time on because they're fairly rare. But there are things. We had an earthquake yesterday. I don't know if you knew that or not, but Ken can tell you about it. But there was an earthquake yesterday. It was a minor one, but nevertheless, it does happen, and these things happen. And so I think that there's several different approaches to how do we deal with emergencies. One of them, of course, is paying the bill at the backside. But the other one is how do we help people help themselves so they can survive that initial incident. And if we can do that, I think we're going to go a long way to helping people. I got to tell you this story, and I know Ken's chomping at the bit to talk, and I'll hold him down here. I was in a taxi cab going to the airport in Washington, D.C., just on my way out. It was shortly after the anthrax thing happened in D.C., anyway, the taxi cab driver was taking me out to the airport, and in the back seat, he had a little card that, and I brought it, or I didn't, I took the website off of it, came home, and again, we weren't in charge of emergency management, sent it over to Ken, sent it over to our people, and said, this thing was a marvelous document that the District of Columbia, and undoubtedly with all federal money, because they're federal supported, I don't know that they have much local money they get out of the district, maybe some sales tax, and that's about it. But this thing was a marvelous document, and basically told people what to do in case of a major emergency. They had the anthrax thing going, they had the shooter going. People were afraid. And what they did to give people that education is they sent this out to every single household, and they sent it like 2 times. And the taxi cab driver, great gentleman, and he said, "Yeah, I got 2 of these things, and they were nicely done, well put together, and it basically was a how-to step through, and you can do this." And he said, "I got 2 of these, and I got one in the mail, and got one in my phone book. You know, when I got my new phone, and it was a slide-out thing you could fold, and it was a marvelous deal." But I looked at that, and I came back, and of course, grabbed our people, talked to Ken over emergency management, and said, "Why don't you guys do something?" Like that. He said, "I couldn't buy the paper, let alone go through the process of getting it all done, because he didn't have the resources to do it, let alone the public outreach that needs to occur." Now, those are the kind of things that we can do for not a lot of money, and we need to do it well, and we need to do it right, and we need to make sure that the public gets as much information as you can, because we can't take care of everybody, nor should we. And people got to learn to take care of themselves, which most of them will. And that's the beauty of what we saw in Vernonia that was testified earlier. Yeah. You know, they wanted help and they needed help. But you know what? They were doing it on their own as best they could. They weren't saying, "Well, poor me." They were just doing it. So I think Oregonians are resilient. Oregonians will jump up to the task. They'll help their neighbor. They'll do these things. But it wouldn't hurt us a bit to get that right education out so they know how to help themselves better.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I just want to ask John Collett, do you know where we could get a copy of that document?
We've got it. Ken,
we can see what we're talking about.
It's a process of localizing it, making it federal.
Maybe we could get counties to do it.
Then get it out to the people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Mr. Murphy.
Chair Boone, members of the committee, I can provide you truckloads of great documentation that we could do. You know, I mean, the ultimate goal in a lot of this, as General Caldwell attested to, you know, it's educating people about everything. Certain parts of the states have to worry about certain areas, and certain environment issues that we have to deal with disasters. But there's a lot we can do. And one of the greatest achievements, two of them that I think is what we can do ahead of the disaster, which is what we've talked about this morning with the Disaster Relief Fund and then this Pacific Northwest Emergency Management Arrangement. And probably the greatest thing is changing the culture of our citizens, getting them to think about those issues and getting them the facts, and even though they may not be ones they want to hear, but I would much rather make sure somebody that lives next to a river understands the consequences and, what they can do to better survive that, and that's done through good education and outreach. So, General Caldwell covered, the Disaster Relief Fund that we discussed this morning in Representative Witt's committee. I think the most important thing I want to emphasize that he talked about is that we just simply need to get this fund established. We talked about it in this committee when it was a joint committee. We talked about it last session, and if we can get this established, we will be miles down the road. I know in my 9 years of short government service to the state of Oregon, I've tried, I think, 2 times, and my predecessors tried the last 20 years to do this fund. So I think we can make a great achievement here and getting this through and then continue to improve upon it as we move into the 09 session.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair? Oh, I just wondered if
Rep. Sunkler,
I will let him talk first.
Thank you.
I
hope Representative Nathanson didn't want to. Former State Senator Dukes just came in the room, too. We're blessed with all these wonderful people today. One of the things I just wanted to talk about here, we talk about more money and funds, and I'm all for that. But the pie is not big enough, period. And the thing that is lacking in the conversation in this building, we're not going to tax our way out of these problems. We are not going to tax our way out of this problem, and I take every opportunity to give this spiel. We're going to work our way out of this problem. We cannot assume and take for granted that we're going to have toilet paper on my Safeway shelf and make it harder for the wood fiber industry in the state of Oregon. We cannot assume that food is going to continue to come from Oregon rather than China and make it more difficult on those in Oregon that grow it for us. We cannot assume that a family wage job is just going to pop up like mushrooms and deny the ability to build on buildable land to build manufacturing industry here in the state of Oregon. Those are the things we're going to have to do. The water, we talk about the excessive amounts of water we've had in the last few years. We need to take that water out of that river, store it, and reuse it when we don't have any water. If we don't do the things I just spelled out, we are not going to have enough money to do all the good things we've talked about here and educate, medicate, incarcerate. We're not having an honest conversation in this building when it comes to money, because there's a bunch of nice people that think that they can have their cake and eat it too, and they simply cannot. And I hope they're listening. I hope the people of Oregon are listening, because that's the conversation we need to have in this state. Thank you for indulging me, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Rep. Nelson?
Yes, I apologize. Rep. Schaffler, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Madam Chair and gentlemen, I was just wondering, what number are you thinking of? What do we need to start with? I mean, is it 10 million or 100
million? Rep. Nelson, I think the number that they're looking at right now for this first effort is a $2 million fund, which is minimal. I think the more important thing is not how much money is going into it. This particular situation, as Director Murphy indicated, more importantly is its establishment of it and the recognition by the state and the legislature as a public policy issue that this is important, that we take care of these things, whether or not it's got 10 cents or 2 million in it or 10 million. Now, if I was king for the day and could do anything I wanted, I'd say you need $500 million or $500 million in it. If you just look at what happened in the 7 counties and the 9 affected areas that happened in this December flood, I think that you're going to blow past that 2 million so fast it'll make your head swim. But regardless of that I think that's a separate debate. I think that this body is elected by the people of the state to have those debates in a periodic manner, which is what this fund actually does. It actually establishes and says that this is what we're going to do, and we're going to debate it on every session. So ultimately, this fund will be competing with schools. It'll be competing with medication. It'll be competing with incarceration. It'll be doing all the things you just said. One of the things that I've certainly learned in my, 30 years plus of government service right now, both on both sides of the dais, you might say, there never is enough money. There never has been, as long as I've been around government. There never will be, because there's always good things out there for people to do. But to have mechanisms in order, as Representative Schaffler so ably put, to work your way out of the problem is certainly more important in my mind from a practical standpoint than whether or not we can figure out the exact perfect method to keep funding this thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Is there any other business to come before I see some future work coming up.
Good.
So thank you to everybody who's come today and helped us do this. And with that, I'll adjourn the committee.